Blog Talk Radio.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lanning, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
Hello, people. April 17, 2009, otherwise known as 8 days away from the draft. We are here again at All Access Football Friday. I'm Rodney Tao. We've got Dan Mohignon. What's up, Dan A?
How's it going, Rodney? I cannot believe it is just a week and a day until the NFL draft, until all this stuff we've been talking about for the past 3-4 months finally comes to fruition.
Oh, yes. And, of course, we have... Can't forget Ralph, Reverend Ralph Mancini here. What's up, Ralph? Hey.
Mass is in session. Let's talk some football, guys.
Okay. We're going to do 1 o'clock. We've got the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're going to go into that. That'll be it. We've done them all this year. Okay. Coming up, this is our wide receiver edition. And first up, before we can go any further, we've got Ramsey's Bard and Cal Poly. Ramsey,
hello,
thank
hello.
You for joining us. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm happy to be back and touch down with everybody and, you know, check in and make sure everything's okay on your front.
Okay, well, you're on the All Access Football Friday show. I'm Rodney Tao. You got my man Dan here and got Ralph right here, Ralph Mancini and Dan Mohignon, excuse me.
Rodney, Dan,
question.
Ralph, how y'all doing?
What's going on?
Okay, Ramsey, you seem pretty relaxed now. It's 9 days from the 8 days from the draft. How do you feel?
I feel really good, actually. You know, the meat of the work is done, at least for the next, you know, 9 days. You know, we did the combine, did the Senior Bowl, we did the pro days, we did the interviews, the visits. You know, everything is pretty much on the table now. Now I just kind of got to hopefully let the hype and the highlights and the, you know, the game tape just work for itself in this last week and change. You know, hopefully it'll take care of me the same way I put that effort out there, you know, months ago.
Okay, well, Ramsey, over the last few weeks, have you done any private workouts?
Me and Mark Sanchez kind of teamed up as far as the private workouts are concerned. We did the Jets and the Redskins a couple of weeks ago. I think they all went really well. And who knows what kind of interest lies there, but, you know, I'm always ready to make any team a fan of me. Hopefully they can, you know, spark some interest on each team that I've had an opportunity to get in front of.
Okay, I just want to let the people know. So listen on Blog Talk Radio. You can go in the chat room if you have a question for Ramsey's Barton. By all means, if it's a good question, we'll put it through.
Hey, Ramsey's, this is Dan here. Let me ask you, you know, you've had a couple quarterbacks in college. You've caught the football from a couple more at the Senior Bowl. How does your buddy Mark Sanchez compare? Is he a head and shoulders above the rest?
Well, I got to give my quarterback some love. My John Dowd from Cal Poly. He was, you know, he's an outstanding football player. You know what I mean, sure, he doesn't have the size and the height, weight, speed, everything to be a really strong NFL prospect. But I got to give him some love. But as far as Mark Sanchez goes, you know, he's a top-tier everything when it comes to football. You know, he's a great athlete. He's a great person. He's a student of the game. He's hungry. He loves to play. He's got everything you want in your franchise quarterback. You know, he's got that leadership ability. And, I mean, you hear these things about him, but, you know, me having the opportunity to spend time with him these last month or so has really opened my eyes to seeing, you know, such a quality guy he is, and it's no wonder, you know, Pete Carroll was trying to hold on to him for that one more year. He's, you know, he comes from a great family. They've been really, really good people, accepting me into their home with the, you know, giving me the opportunity to work out with him and you know, us just creating that bond. So I've got great things to say about Mark. We could talk about him all day.
Well, let me ask you one more about him. How did this whole relationship come about? You know, you guys aren't even rep by the same guy, so how did this come about?
Well, Before he transferred in high school, he went to school with a teammate of mine who I guess he was working out in the same place with, you know, for some of the pre-draft stuff. And I guess that sparked some interest. And his brothers and his dad do a lot as far as, you know, his business decisions are concerned. And they had the idea of getting another receiver. You know, he already had Patrick Turner, PT, to, you know, he's got that camaraderie and that chemistry with, but I guess he needed another one just to help some of the workouts run smoothly. You know, another target, another guy to work out with, and just, you know, to continue sharpening his game. And it worked out great for both of us. And I guess he saw an opportunity to work with one of the better receivers, you know, in the country. And I felt honored that they reached out to me and gave me the opportunity to, you know, build that bond.
Hey, Ramsey's Ralph here. I wanted to ask you, you know, in recent years, you've had some small school players, you know, guys like Marquise Colston, guys like Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, sort of paved the way for you, you know, since you also come from a smaller school. Well, what are some of the challenges that a small school player such as yourself faces going into the NFL?
One thing is you don't have that instant fan recognition, that mass media exposure to ESPN, the NFL networks like all the SEC, the Pac-10 type guys have, just because, you know, they're such powerful programs consistently year in, year out. It's a little bit more of a struggle. It's not to say that, you know, there's the talent isn't close. I mean, it's definitely a little bit of a drop off, but if you're looking in the right spots, there's an abundance of talent in the lower division. It's just sometimes it takes a little bit thicker microscope to find it. But as far as the competition level is concerned, like I said, there's a little bit of a drop off, but you've got guys out there who can play, and you might not see the best player week in, week out, but you're going to see some pretty good players, some NFL caliber players, you know, at every position, you know, regardless of where you are on the field.
So how was the whole Senior Bowl experience like for you? I mean, did you feel like you were playing against, you know, the top guys, the top defensive backs in the country, or was there not much of a difference, do you think, between the guys you played against at Cal Poly?
There's a little bit of a difference just in the fact that everybody up there at the Senior Bowl is one of the best. Now, I feel as if I played against, you know, a number of extremely talented corners in my career, but it was more as if that each person I played against was one of those talented corners. So it wasn't new in that sense, but it was definitely just more consistent quality that we were able to experience.
And also, tell us of an extremely tall player as yourself, what type of advantage does that present for yourself, or does that give you going into the pros? How does your height work in your favor, do you think?
Well, it almost gives me like I don't even know the word, but it's not benchmark, but my, it's, I guess, the opposite of ceiling. My floor is a lot higher than somebody who doesn't have the same stature, the same build as me. At the very worst, I'm still, I feel at least, an incredible prospect and you know, a threat to any defense just because of some of the things I could do in the red zone as far as possessions are concerned, you know, the short yardage situation, third down. So that's at the very least. And then you add that with things that you see on tape that I can do, I feel as if that, you know, my potential is limitless, and I can't wait to not just have this potential, but, you know, to maximize it and be the player that I know I'm going to become.
So you have less of a downside, is what you're saying.
Exactly. I mean, I feel as if I'm a safe person to have on any team, just because at the very least you're getting in a lot of value and a lot of tools to use at any particular time.
Hey, Ramses, I know last time you were on with us was Monday night with Rick and Josh, and you guys joked a little bit about your look-alike with Keyshawn Johnson. So, you're a big receiver like Keyshawn was. I want to ask you, do you trash talk like Keyshawn trash talk? And are you going to come out with a book after your rookie season?
Maybe not after my rookie season. I gotta make sure that I'm doing the right things on the field before I start trying to do too much. You know, you gotta pay respect to the team and veterans and all that stuff. Keyshawn definitely earned everything that he was able to. He was able to do everything that he received. So nothing but respect to him. But you know, I've got to do that for myself. I can't try to follow in somebody else's footsteps, especially when I haven't accomplished
things. You want
to
get a cobalt under your belt first, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I want to get some recognition, have a 1,000-yard season or two before I start doing too much. But who knows? Maybe the first year will be that first 1,000-yard season. I would love it if it is.
How about the trash talking part?
Trash talk. It depends on the day, you know. It doesn't take much to get me going. If a DB starts trying to get under my skin, I'm right there ready to get back at him. But most of the time, I don't have any problem letting my game speak for itself. But I enjoy the occasional, you know, jabs, little barbs to throw at the defender just to keep things interesting.
And just curious, being a California guy, were you a Keyshawn fan? And if not, who was your favorite receiver growing up?
Oh man, I'd probably say Randy Moss has always been one of my favorites, just because he really has changed the position. I think he's given me more of an opportunity as far as you mentioned, you know, small school players leading the way. I think he's really kind of led the way as far as big receivers are concerned, really showing that, you know, we have the ability to go up and get the ball and fight for it and out-jump defenders, and that being not necessarily a staple, but something that almost comes standard with, you know, a big target. So I definitely have to pay respect to somebody like him who's done that for so long and then added, you know, other dynamics to his game.
All right, well, Ramsey, as far as your strengths and your weaknesses, what strengths do you think will translate really well into the NFL? And what potential weaknesses are you really working on hard, you know, before you go into an NFL camp later on this month, actually?
I think that the more that I think about it, I think my biggest strength is actually my desire to get better, my coachability. I mean, I've never been the kind of person to settle. I've always been the player who's gotten better every year I played the sport. If you go back and watch the tape, the numbers are going up, the production's going up, just how I run my routes, how I attack the ball, my effort, everything has always, you know, climbed with each year that I play the game. I've always strived to learn as much as I can and be the best player. So, I mean, the physical tools are given. That's obvious. People know that, and that's what attracts them to me. But I think what gives my potential so much, value is that I'm the kind of guy who wants to maximize that potential. And as far as weaknesses, I don't know. What we have been working on is probably the same thing that everybody else has been working on, just adding those fine details to my game to help separate, you know, what separates the good players from the great players.
Okay, well, Ramsey, before we let you go, we'd like to do something we call 3-and-out. Each of us are going to ask you one quick question, all right? Are you ready?
I hope
okay,
so.
First question.
Only one way to find out.
You're ready, trust me. You sound like you're ready. All right. Well, Ramsey, favorite television show?
Cosby Show.
Okay, second down, Ramsey. Your favorite female entertainer, whether she be an actress, singer, or what have you?
Oh, boy. That's tough. Like, I get greedy.
We all do.
I can have more than one because I got a couple different age ranges. I mean, if I'm going with the older one, I got to go with Stacey Dash or Holly Berry. But if I'm going younger, then I can appreciate a Rihanna or a Christina Milian. So I have to, you know, it really depends on what the age group is. Or even older than go ahead.
I was going to say, if you're calling Halle Berry old, you just made me feel old, my man.
No, I didn't mean to. I hope she's not listening. I meant older than me.
Well, we hope she is. You just ruined your chances, bud. I'll tell you that much. You ruined your chances calling her.
I'll tell you what. For Stacey Dash, Dash is over the hell, then I love old women then.
Well, I know, I think Stacey Dash is in her 40s. So that I can still, I still am on. I think Halle Berry is probably like mid-30s. I honestly don't know. But don't be mad at me, Halle, if you're listening.
I think Halle's actually older. She's actually in her 40s.
Oh, well, that's fine with me.
So, Ramsey, are we going to get you on that new show, The Cougar, then?
Oh, boy. Again, that's another thing. I want to make sure I make enough of a splash in the NFL before I start venturing too far away into TV contracts and personal appearances.
All right, man. Third down. This one's, I think, an easier one. Biggie or Tupac?
Tupac. Right. Then Nas and AZ, and then Royce the 5'9". Huh?
West Coast rules.
All right, nice. All right, you threw some Nas and Jay Z there. All right, I like that.
I didn't say Jay Z. I didn't say Jay Z. I said AZ, as in Apple.
Oh, oh. Okay.
You got look him up if you don't know who he is.
I know who he is.
I've heard of the name. I'm not really a West Coast guy, East Coast guy over here. But Ramsey.
Oh, he's East Coast.
Okay, excuse me. AZ.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
AZ, man. All right. Hey, Ramsey, thank you for joining us. We look forward to hearing your name called next Saturday or next Sunday seeing you on Sunday.
Thank you. I hope it's Saturday, too.
All right, Ramsey, thank you again for joining us.
Take care. I really appreciate it.
You don't know AZ, man? Are you still listening to Vanilla Ice?
Sugar Hill, right? Sugar Hill?
Ramsey, that was Ramsey's Barden of Cal Poly. Very, very lively guy. He sounds like he's ready to go.
No, he's got a good personality, really bright kid. You know, you talk to him a couple times, he's one of those kids you can't help but root for, right?
Exactly.
Very intelligent, well-spoken individual.
Yeah, it's funny, but to be honest, any guy that comes on this show, that's on this show, I can't help but secretly root for him anyway. All right? But next up, what we're going to do now, we're going to look at briefly at the NFL news for the last week. It's quieting down. Of course, it's the calm before the storm because next Saturday, all is going to break loose.
Well,
all right?
the first draft trade, right?
Yes, sir. Jason Peters traded by the Bills to the Eagles for a first rounder, a fourth rounder, and a sixth rounder next year. So the Eagles get that stud left tackle in there. The Bills, they were unable to reach a contract settlement with Jason Peters. So now the Eagles, after signing, they have the Andrews boys, and now they have Jason Peters. How good an offensive line can this team have with these monsters here?
You're talking about Philadelphia?
They're all huge guys, huge, quick guys.
Yeah, they're going to have a playoff type of offensive line. You know, an offensive line along with an offense that's going to be ready to win now. Obviously, they can use another wide receiver, but, you know, let's face it, you know, they came to a close with their two bookend tackles after all these years with Trey Thomas and John Runyon, who were together for about 8 or 9 years. Trey Thomas is no longer there, and Runyon, who knows if he's coming back, suffered a serious injury, and he's getting up there in years as well. So, look, I love this trade. Jason Peters is a young player. We're talking about a guy who's a former tight end, so you know he's athletic. To me, he's a guy that is on his way up. He's only going to get better, and you combine him with some other primetime talent on the offensive line. I think he should fit in very well. Look, he did cost a lot. But, you know, this is the price of left tackles. You know, you don't know what you're going to get if you invest in a late-round left tackle in the draft. At least now you know what you're getting. They're going to be competing with the Giants and the Cowboys, for the playoffs this year, so they can't mess around. They can't take a chance, you know, and especially when you go up against a team like the Giants that throws so many defensive ends, so many linebackers at you.
In other words, it's not good when O.C. Umanura has like 8 sacks in one game. That's not a good thing for Philly.
Yeah, all Philly fans still remember Winston Justice as the guy who gave up about 6 sacks to O.C. Umanura a couple of years ago. So I think this is a move that Philly had to make. And if I'm a Philly fan, I'm really excited about bringing in Jason Peters.
I agree with Ralph. I mean, you gave up your second number one pick, so you still have your higher pick in the 20s. You gave up the 28th pick, I believe it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you still can get young and build through the draft at the same time. And, you know, to me, you can never have enough talent up front. Without the talent up front, the skilled players can't really do much anyway, and your two top players – are McNabb and are Westbrook, both guys who have had durability, some durability issues, both guys that you'd rather not get hit, you know, less as possible. So why not build up the, that foundation and build up the front line?
Yeah, I guess you guys are right. I mean, I just think skill position, when are they going to get skill position players? But I also know John Madden, excuse me, he retires after 30 years in the broadcast booth. Madden won a Super Bowl as a coach of the Rays in 1977, of course, retired in 1979, and has been on basically any place that has had NFL football. Madden has been there at some point. CBS, Fox, ABC, Channel 4, NBC.
He's been on all the networks.
Yeah, he's been on all the networks. He's basically, you know, at least definitely me and Ralph, he's been on during the entirety of our football watching days. I don't remember watching football without having Madden announcing. That was his coaching days were a little bit before me, and obviously he was a heck of a coach too. People younger than me might not even know him as a coach or an announcer. They know him as a guy who's got the best football video game out there. I think the interesting thing here is because I think we knew this day was coming soon. Maybe we didn't know it was going to be yesterday, but we knew it was coming soon, is where does he go from here, and does Al Davis maybe actually have a football person he'll listen to and trust if Madden decides to go back to the silver and black?
Well, what I love about this move is that John Madden gets a chance to go out on his own terms. You know, a lot of times you might see people who stay there too long that sort of, you know, get a little hazy, a little bit comes off their fastball.
And we won't name names. We won't name names.
No,
we know who they are.
No, we're not that type of people here. But, so he goes out on his own terms, and he will forever be remembered as the guy, as the boisterous guy, as the loud guy, as one of the faces of the NFL. And I always enjoyed listening to him. But as I said, I like the fact that he's going out not because of any health issues, not because he's being forced out, but because he just wants to go. He thinks it's time to go. He wants to spend more time with his wife and with his family, and that's fine, and I can't begrudge him that. And I wish him the best of luck in whatever he chooses to do.
Yeah, I bet you think that he's done some great work over the last few years. I mean, he adjusted from the whole bang, boom, boom, and it's like his analysis was just dead on. I mean, so this was a guy who actually seemed to have gotten better as he was getting older. All right, but also in as far as the news, we've got Anquan Boldin. After the Cardinals had publicly stated that they are entertaining trade offers for Anquan Boldin, Anquan Boldin had a statement of his own. He went to Michael Irvin's show, and on a Michael Irvin show said he's open to getting traded to any team, especially to the NFC East. He also said that he wouldn't mind playing for his former offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, who's now the coach in KC. So Anquan Boldin may be coming to a town near you.
I don't know what to make of this, because just a couple of weeks ago, Anquan Boldin was saying that he would have loved to have gone back to Florida. We all remember he's a former Florida State guy. So, you know, he was obviously alluding to the fact that Miami might have been interested in him, and now he's saying that he might go to NFC East. He might go back with his old coach in KC. I think Anquan Boldin is open to going to whatever team is going to give him what he's looking for in terms of dollars and cents. And, hey, look, if I'm the New York Giants, for instance, if he's available and I can get him, I think that this is the best available wide receiver out there among any guys you could trade for. Look, they have an opportunity maybe to trade for Braylon Edwards. I'm still going to go with Anquan Boldin, even though he's a guy that tends to get injured a little bit. He's a complete receiver, a tremendous athlete, a game changer. Hey, you need somebody of that ilk to replace Plexico Burress. You're not going to replace him with just anybody out there. And I think Anquan Boldin could come close, if not exceed, what Plexico Burress gave the New York Giants these past few seasons.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Ralph. I think down the road, Braylon Edwards may have a higher ceiling, but to use Ramsey's Barden terms, Bolden's got a higher floor. We know he's not going to have the type of year Edwards had last year, dropping the football over the place, only 3 touchdowns. If Boldin stays healthy, he's going to put up, you know, solid to above average numbers for sure.
Okay, well, let's move on, fellas. On the clock, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers on the clock. Our last one, the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, 12-4, first AFC North. I guess I should mention they are also the Super Bowl champions for the 6th time in franchise history. The last 5 years, they've gone 56-24. last year, surprisingly, looking at this number, kind of surprised me a little bit. Their offensive rankings was only number 22. Defensively, of course, we all know they ranked number one. All right? Looking at their drafts, look at 2008, Rashard Mendenhall. Remember, this kid was out most of the season after an injury courtesy of, that was Ray Lewis.
Yep.
And then we have Lyman Sweet in the second round. Bruce Davis, an outside linebacker that we might hear from in the future. And looking at the last 5 years, of course, Mendenhall was the first rounder last year. Timmons, first rounder 2007. Santonio Holmes, 2006 was a first rounder. Heath Miller, first rounder 2005. Ben Roethlisberger, first rounder 2004. Now, we've been reading off these numbers for a while now. That's the most impressive five first round draft picks that I think we've read off thus far. But, Dan, let's go with booms or busts.
Yeah, particularly the first three, I think. Big Ben, Heath Miller, Santonio Holmes, they did very well with those guys. In terms of the draft, they did really well building this team. 04, 05, obviously you got your quarterback and you got a tackle in Max Starks. And then in 2005, they added Heath Miller, McFadden, Trey Essex, and Kumiatu, thank you, Ralph, the offensive guard. So they added five starters in that draft, which is key. And really, ironically, they really got very little to nothing from any of their rookies from last year's draft. Mm. It was really the drafts prior to that. And, of course, with our buddy Lamar Woodley really coming on strong last season and you know, being one of their top defensive players. So, and in terms of busts, I mean, not too many here. Freddie Gibson obviously didn't pan out. Willie Reed didn't pan out. Orion Harris, Ryan McBean. It seems like that fourth round is a little bit of a bugaboo for these guys, but considering what they do the rest of the draft, they've handled their business draft day.
Okay, well, Ralph, as far as additions and subtractions, anything of note here?
Well, the one thing of note is that they haven't signed any free agents from any other teams, any unrestricted free agents. And this is their modus operandi. This is what they usually do. They're not going to break the bank for any big-name free agents. But they did lose a few key contributors from last year's Super Bowl squad. And I'm going to start with Bryant McFadden over at cornerback, 6 foot tall, a physical cornerback. He was signed by the Arizona Cardinals. And also, their best tackle, Marvell Smith, signed on with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, this guy, in my opinion, is a guy that, when he's healthy, he's a guy that is going to open up some lanes for the running game. Unfortunately, had some back problems last year. And, you know, they did re-sign Charlie Batch. They lost Nate Washington at wide receiver. Washington, who's not a superstar, but did very well as their third receiver, is definitely a deep threat. And so Lyman Swede is going to have some pretty big shoes to fill to be that number three receiver. I think going ahead, I think wide receiver is definitely going to be one of their draft needs.
Isn't that a great spot for a kid to get drafted to, though? You come in your first year, they really don't even need you to contribute at all. Your second year, yeah, they need you to step up, but to be the number three receiver, not to be a number two, number one. So, you know, he can really come along at his own speed.
And just let me add in, number three receiver with a good, very good
tight end
in Heath Miller.
Yeah, but being a third receiver nowadays isn't like being a third receiver, let's say, 20 years ago, where you didn't have as many multiple receiver formations. Now, a lot of times, you can see that third receiver out there for much of the game, for maybe 60, 70% of the snaps that an offense takes. So being a third receiver comes with a lot of responsibilities. And I don't know if the man from Texas, Swede, is going to be up for the task. He did disappoint me quite a bit last season. So, you know, hopefully he'll turn it around.
All right, well, Rob Hobbs was going to stay with you. As far as their draft needs, what are the needs for a team that seems to have a little bit of everything?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, obviously this is a deep team. It's a very talented team. But I think they do need to fill in some gaps, to fill in some holes, to build up some depth more than anything else at certain positions. So even if they draft guys that don't perform in their first year, maybe 2-3 years down the road, these are guys that need to step up. And I think it all starts along the offensive line, in particular at tackle. I already did mention that, they lost Marvell Smith, who started out as their left tackle last year, had some back issues, and now They're going to be left with Willie Colon over on the right side and Max Starks over at left tackle. Max Starks held his own, but to me, he's not a special player. Willie Colon is more of a guard than a tackle, in my opinion. So I think that they need not only a left tackle, but they're going to need a right tackle as well, and perhaps move Willie Colon inside, and that'll help fill in their need at the guard position. So I think that in the first round, I think they're really going to be focusing on tackle. You know, I mean, Dan can give you some of the names out there. Obviously, a guy like Evan Britton, a guy like Beatty from Connecticut can certainly fit the bill over there. And then also, we mentioned wide receiver. Who's going to be that third wide receiver? Well, we think it's going to be Lyman Swede, but do we really know what type of player Swede is going to be? He certainly disappointed last year. They're terribly in the playoffs. I don't know if the Steelers can depend on this kid. I think they need to bring in another body at that position to at least compete with Lyman Swede. And then what about cornerback? I already mentioned that Brian McFadden is no longer there. He was a physical guy. He was a guy that could depend on. Now, they're pretty deep at that position, but nobody could be considered really a shutdown corner. You know, we're talking about Ike Taylor. We're talking about William Gay. Nice players. But if that potential shutdown corner is there, a guy with special abilities is there, who knows, second, third, fourth round, I think it would behoove the Pittsburgh Steelers to really take a look at a guy like that. And finally, I think down the road, I think it would also make sense for them to maybe look for another free safety. Ryan Clark is entering his contract year. He's going to be 30 years old. Are they going to be willing to re-sign a 30-year-old free safety to a big deal, a multi-year deal next year? So I think going forward, maybe in the late rounds of the draft, if they see that free safety that could flourish, that could develop into a potential starter, I think the Steelers would be wise to select that type of player.
All right. We have our next guest on the line. He's the wide receiver from Rice, known as Jarrett Dillard. Hey, Jared, thank you for joining us.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
Okay, I'm Rodney Tao. My partner is Danny Mogagnon, Ralph Mancini, and this is the All Access Football Friday show. And the first question for you, the first question we have for you is basically what teams have you done workouts for, if any, thus far?
Houston Texans. I've done a workout for the Houston Texans, and it went real well, so you know, we'll see how that goes from there.
Okay, 8 days away from the draft. Basically, what are you up to now, right now?
I just worked out today, and now I'm just going to work out again next week because I heard that a rookie minicamp doesn't take any time to get here. So I'm just going to stay in shape, just, you know, continue working out, and just get ready to make that next move.
Hey, Jared, Ralph Mancini here. A lot of football fans here in the New York area caught their first glimpse of Jarrett Dillard in the East-West Shrine Game. You did very well. You were very impressive. Could you tell us about that whole experience?
Oh, you know, it was a great experience to play against corners that I've never played against, and then, you know, play with a different quarterback and other receivers and under different coaching staff. But, you know, as far as the football aspect, I mean, I didn't do anything differently. I just played the same game that I've been playing at Rice, you know, my whole 4 years here at Rice, so, you know, right here in Houston, so I was really right at home.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times people, when they think of the prototypical wide receiver in the NFL, they think about a guy who's 6'2", 6'3". You know, you're not the biggest receiver out there, but you certainly have long arms, and you got great leaping ability. So tell us, what do you think is your best asset as a wide receiver, and what is the most underrated part of your game?
Oh, well, yeah, I think my best asset as a receiver would most definitely be my leaping ability and catching the ball at its highest point and catching it with my hands. You know, I can see sometimes receivers let it get to their chest, and that just gives that DB that extra split second to hit the ball down. So, you know, I go and meet the ball with my hands. But I think underrated was just the heart that I put on the field, you know, the teamwork that I build with the team and the quarterbacks as well, you know, everybody that's on the team. You know, I really, you know, put an effort in, you know, keeping a good team bond. You know, when you have a good team together with great chemistry, I think that really can go a long way, and that can win championships.
Hey, Jared, it's Dan here. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, my man. Now, we had Ian last week on because we were talking running backs, and he mentioned that you guys didn't get you didn't keep those threads that we saw in ESPN, the magazine, those good-looking clothes you guys were trying on. I know when I was talking to you guys the day before, you guys were looking forward to maybe getting some free clothes. What happened, man? Where was the miscommunication there?
Man, I think when you have $2,000 and $3,000 worth of clothes on at one time, ensembles, I don't think they let those get away. I think they keep the eye on those. So, you know, I guess the Armani and the Gucci and Burberry, all that stuff they had on, I think they didn't allow that. So, you know, we just have to give it back.
Well, what was, I guess, your favorite brand or the most fun? Which store did you like the most while you were in New York?
You know, we went to the J. Crew store, and I don't really shop there too much. You know, I see it when I'm in the mall down here in Houston, but don't really go in there too much. But, you know, as you walk in and you see the different, you know, clothes and jeans and shirts they have, you know, you kind of realize that you can wear some of that stuff. And, you know, I kind of keep my eye out on J. Crew now. You know, I don't shop there too much now, but I'm sure in the future I will a little bit more.
J. Crew, if you're listening, we got a potential pitch man for you here.
Yeah, hope they're listening.
So, what else have you been up to besides the workouts? You're catching up on those Lawn Orders?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I saw an amazing episode like two nights ago. But yes, when I'm not working out, I'm playing a lot of golf. You know, I've been having to waste a lot of time these, you know, with no workouts and, you know, not having to work as hard on the field anymore. You know, just doing football related stuff. You know, I've been playing a lot of rounds of golf, you know, at least like three times a week with other players that I went to school with and ex-Rice players. So, you know, I've just been hitting the courses here in Houston.
How about the Wii? Have you tried the golf on the Wii, the Tiger Woods? I hear it's pretty close to being realistic to actually being on the links.
No, I haven't played that one yet. You know, one of my good friends, my roommate, he has a Wii, so I may talk to him about that, you know, see if we can get something going with that.
All right. Well, Jared, as far as going back to football, as far as the combine, can you tell us something that the fans, we don't realize that you guys are going through as we're watching you, you know, run the tests, the drills, get weighed, measured to your doctor? What's going on behind the scenes that we have no clue about?
I mean, it's all the physicals and, you know, it's a long length of time that you're just sitting down waiting. You know, it's a lot of waiting, and it's, you know, basically, who's the most patient? That's the guy they're looking for, and so much that goes into it that you know, I guess television and then that media don't show that. Yeah, you know, a combine is a different experience. There's no way you can mimic it. There's no mock for it. You just have to, you know, suck it all up for, you know, those 48 hours or those 72 hours and just go with it.
What was the strangest question that they asked you there? I know some of these teams ask some wacky, bizarre, far out questions, either in their tests or the interview process. What was the question that somebody asked you that just made you say, like, what does that have to do with anything, you know?
You know, when I heard a guy say, man, you have small hands, and I guess he said it like it was a bad thing, you know. And I was like, I have small hands. I didn't know the size of my hands would really be a knock on me, you know. So I kind of asked him, you know, like, how does that change the way I play? Because I think I catch the ball maybe, I think, around 95% of the time, 94-95% of the time. I mean, I'm not 100, but I work to be there. But, you know, for me to have small hands and catch the ball the way I do, I think that's fine. I don't think that's a knock on anybody. But, you know, when I saw that, I was just, wow, you know, I was just amazed that, you know, coaches will look at hand size as a tool to see if a guy's going to be able to make it or not.
Yeah, I don't think there's a part of you that they don't measure at these things and look at. It's amazing.
Exactly.
All right, Jared, tell us, as far as you're leaving college, going to the pros, what are you going to miss about college, and what are you looking forward to in the pros?
You know, you're going to miss that student bond. You know, you have all the people here at the school that really support the athletics, and you're going to, you know, you might miss that on the next level because, you know, it's not really a student atmosphere anymore. You know, some students, that's all they have for entertainment. You know, it's just a football game on the weekend. So, you know, you probably won't have that anymore. But, you know, to the next level, I'm looking forward to just, you know, those big Sunday night games. I mean, every guy wants to play on Sunday nights. That's what you want to do. So I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, Jared, what part of your game are you really trying to polish in preparing for the NFL? You know, a lot of times receivers, athletic receivers with all the skills in the world, they have a hard time making the transition to the next level because it takes a lot more than just physical talent. It takes courage to go across the middle, to be able to take the big hit. What are the types of things that you're trying to prepare for, that you're trying to polish to refine your game, to prepare yourself for the NFL?
I think I'm trying to prepare for that blocking, that safety, deep safety coming down. You know, I know that's going to be a task that I'm going to be asked to do. So, you know, going in and reaching for the linebackers and reaching for those strong safeties, I know that's going to be one aspect of my game that I'm trying to polish up right now so I can be ready for that transition.
Hey, Jared, we were talking to Ramses Barden before, and we asked him how he does in terms of trash talker. Are you a trash talker on the field?
No, I talked trash maybe my freshman year, and then I saw that they took a touchdown away from me, not because of me talking. It's just, I guess, one of our old linemen was holding, and I kind of figured that, man, me talking trash, thinking I was big stuff, that kind of got that touchdown pulled from me. So, you know, I kind of just keep my mouth closed, and I let my game do the talking now.
All right, that sounds pretty good. So you just kind of made that, you know, mature decision on your own. It wasn't a coach or anything. You just figured on your own, hey, I better just let my play do my talking.
Yeah. I was on the field talking. You know, it was good talk. I mean, the cornerback going back and forth, and then, you know, I caught the ball, ran in for a touchdown, felt all good, celebrated a little bit, and threw the ball behind my back in the end zone, and looked down the field. I see a flag on the ground, and, you know, I have to reckon what happened. And, you know, I thought it was me. You know, I thought it was me for, you know, celebrating or whatever the case may be, or talking, but it was just holding, and, you know, we had to bring the touchdown back. So, you know, that kind of just lets me know that, you know, hey, you know, it's not over till it's over. So you talking noise, it's not going to help the situation.
Do you remember who the corner was?
No, I do not. I know it was Southern Methodist, or SMU, out of Dallas. But I don't remember who the corner was at all.
Now, you mentioned working out for the Texans, the hometown team. I know you're going to give, you know, the stock answer is always, hey, whoever takes me, I'll be happy to go there. But would it be extra cool to go to your hometown team so you could be close to home and your family could watch you play?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, to play here in Houston, you know, my apartment actually right now is just maybe two blocks from Reliant Stadium, so that wouldn't be too bad. I may not even move, but, you know, that'd be good. But, you know, I'm sure that whatever team I, you know, get drafted to, that my family will be able to make some of the games and watch them on television.
All right, Jared, at what point did you realize that you had, that you potentially could play on the next level in the NFL?
I guess when I saw the first scouts come out to our practices and they were not looking at our kickers or anybody else, they were actually looking at me, then that kind of put a light come on in my head, like, hey, you probably, you know, if you work at it, you could probably make it. So that's what I, you know, that was that light coming on, and that was about 3 years ago.
Okay, so that was after during your sophomore, freshman year in there somewhere.
Yes.
All right. Well, John, before we let you go, we'd like to do something we call three and out. Each of us, we're going to ask you one question, one quick question. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Of course you are. All right. Your first question, boxing or mixed martial arts, which do you think is a more legitimate sport?
Boxing.
Okay, second down, Jared. Your favorite female entertainer. Now, Ramses Barden, who we just interviewed before, gave us like six different women. You know, one woman's not good enough for him. But we want to know who is your favorite singer, actress, female entertainer. It could be anybody. Who would that be?
It has Beyonce Knowles.
All right. Third down, Jared. Who was your favorite superhero growing up?
My favorite superhero growing up. I mean, honestly, it probably have to be Captain Planet, man. Everybody liked Captain Planet when they were kids.
All right, interesting.
Okay, hey, Jared, thank you very much for joining us.
Appreciate it.
We look forward to hearing your name called on Saturday or Sunday and seeing you next in the fall on the field on Sundays.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, good luck going forward.
Thanks, Jared.
All right.
That was Jared Dillard, the wide receiver from Rice. All right, gentlemen, and this is the wide receiver tight end edition today. So Now we're going to put the spotlight on the wide receivers even more so. All right? First question for you guys. I'm going to leave this one to Ralph. The first receiver off the board, Ralph.
I think that's definitely going to be Michael Crabtree. He offers size, strength, remarkable playmaking ability. He should thrive on just about any team or in just about any system. Has great hands, body control, tremendous after the catch as he keeps his balance, keeps his legs churning, making him hard to bring down in the open field. I think this guy has all the tools to be a major star. I wouldn't be worried about his 40 time, you know, and the fact that he didn't run because of his injury. Hey, if you're not convinced on Crabtree, you should watch a few of his games. If he's healthy, I think Michael Crabtree will be dominant at the next level.
Yeah, I can't disagree with him being the first guy off the board. I mean, you brought up certain question marks people have. I asked Mike Leach about that. He called it, you know, complete foolishness. He's like, you know, he pointed to the production of Wes Welker, a former Red Raider, and, you know, Crabtree's faster than him, a lot bigger than him. So he thought that was just kind of ridiculous. I agree. You know, I think he's going to be the number one receiver. If anybody does challenge him, I think the only likely candidate would be Jeremy Maclin, who's, you know, probably the most dynamic receiver, I think, with the ball in his hands.
Right.
He's not as big as Crabtree, but he's bigger than a Harvin. He has less question marks. You know, and obviously he's got to prove himself in terms of running certain routes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got to acclimate himself from the game. Like, similar to Crabtree, both only have 2 years of college experience. Both are coming from spread offenses. But I think, you know, most likely Maclin will be the second receiver somewhere between 7 and 17. I figure him going.
All right, Dan, can you tell us about anybody else who may go in the first round?
Yeah, I think there's a few guys that could go in the first round for sure. You know, last year we saw none, but I don't think that's going to be an issue this year. I mentioned Percy Harvin. He's a guy that you bring up immediately when you think of guys that are slipping. I don't know, deep down I still kind of feel like he's still going to go in the first round. I don't see him slipping past the teams in the 20s. There's a bunch of teams there that could be interested in a wide receiver. We mentioned the Pittsburgh Steelers as well as Arizona, New York, if they don't get one. If they do get one, that could mean a team like Philly, a team like Arizona suddenly could be looking for a wide receiver. You got the Eagles, the Vikings, the Dolphins, the Ravens. I think too many teams could use a wide receiver for this kid to slip out. Obviously, he's got the character issues. He's got the durability issues. The kid gets hurt a lot. And I think I'm a little scared because he seems to make a lot of his big plays as a running back, but he's a playmaker. He's a guy that if you get the ball in his hands, he's going to make things happen. He's going to be an immediate impact guy as a return man. So I don't think that's a big issue. And then the other guy that I think is going to be a first-round pick is Darius Heyward-Bey out of Maryland. Kenny Britt out of Rutgers. I almost stole Ralph's guy there. Kenny Britt out of Rutgers brings good size. A little inconsistent, but I think good upside. I think he could be a number one wide receiver in the NFL. If he cleans up his game, does a little bit better job of using his hands to catch the football and just show more consistency. He's got good size, and he's not a blazer like Crabtree, but he's got enough speed to be a starting wide receiver in the NFL.
Ralph, how about some of these other guys who may go in the first round?
Well, you know, a guy that I really like is Hakeem the Dream Nix. The first thing that comes to mind with Nix is his soft hands. Like the great one, he catches the ball away from the frame of his body, goes after the ball at its highest point, and makes the difficult grab seem routine thanks to his unmatched hand-eye coordination. And like Crabtree, he's outstanding after the catch. He runs with great vision. He also accelerates into his routes quickly. And if there's any cushion between him and the cornerback, he's going to eat it up quickly. So I could definitely see him as a fit on a team like the Indianapolis Colts later on in the first round. And then the other guy that we mentioned before is Darius Heyward-Bey. To me, he's more of a boom-bust type of guy with a very, very high upside. He's a tall receiver at about 6'2", 6'3", with elite speed to leave entire secondaries in the dust. The concerns with him are his hands. He double clutches some passes and drops some very easy throws from time to time. Another concern is his route running. He needs to be a little quicker in his breaks. You can sometimes see him stumble or trying to gather himself in his cuts, which creates opportunities for DBs to jump his routes. But make no mistake, he's a big play guy who stretched the field. Now, you know he's going to make some big plays, but is he going to be a number one receiver or is he going to be a number three receiver? Because Nate Washington can also go down the field and he also has a lot of speed. But if you're picking a guy in the first round, you want the guy to run the entire route tree. So that's a little bit of concern that I have with Darius Heyward-Bey. But as I said, his upside is extremely high.
Okay, how about anything in the way of a safe second rounder?
Well, as far as those players are concerned, you know, I love Brian Rybitsky. You know, along with size, strength, route running skills, and good hands, the former Buckeye gives you intangibles. He's the son of a former player and longtime NFL coach, Terry Rybitsky. And with that comes discipline, refined technique, and the know-how that allows him to be versatile enough to be effective both in the slot or lineup on the outside. He's 6'3", and he uses his size to his advantage by powering through press coverage with his long arms. He shields defenders very well, and he's not afraid to make the tough catch in a crowd or go over the middle. I love Brian Rybitsky. May not be as fast as some of these other players out there, but he's got everything else.
Again, how about another guy that can save second rounder?
Yeah, I think another guy is Joaquin Iglesias. And like Rybitsky, and unlike the guys that we talked about being first rounders, this is a senior with a lot of experience. So that's what differentiates those two guys, I think, from that first group, the first couple of groups that we talked about, who are all underclassmen, sophomores and juniors. And Iglesias, to me, kind of can do a little bit of everything. He can run a variety of routes. He can go over the middle. He can line up on the slot. He can also go deep. He's a guy that knows how to gain separation from the DBs. And he has good hands. You know, he makes the catch, and he can make some things happen after the catch as well. So I could see him as a player who could contribute as a slot guy from day one and then eventually work his way up to being a number two receiver.
And if I can add on Iglesias, he's also a savvy route runner. If you watch him play, a lot of times he employs a lot of head fakes to fool the opposition, his defenders. So I think he's a smart guy that's going to be able to run a lot of different routes.
All right, well, Dan, start us off in a discussion of the top slot receivers.
Well, obviously, outside of, you know, guys like Harvin and Macklin, we're talking about guys that are projected as purely slot guys. I'd have to start with Mike Thomas out of Arizona, the Pac-10's all-time leading wide receiver. You know, he did run a 4.4 in the 40-yard dash at the combine, but even so, he's still more of a guy that uses quickness than necessarily pure speed. So I could really see him being a weapon in the slot, going after the catch, and, you know, he's a guy that also can go up and get the football. You know, he's not the leaper Jared Dillard is, but he still had a 40.5-inch vertical. And another guy to keep in mind is Derek Williams, the kid out of Penn State. Doesn't necessarily have the long speed that a lot of people projected when they were talking about him being a potential first-round pick. But if you get him late in the second round or sometime in the third round, I think he brings pretty good value, and he's another guy that's really good with the football in his hands and can make things happen after the catch. And I'll throw one more name out there, an intriguing name, Pat White. You know, eventually he may not be a quarterback. Eventually he may end up being more of the slot guy. We may see him doing that as a rookie just to get on the field, and who knows, that may be where he ultimately ends up being a slot-type receiver.
All right, Rob, slot receivers, who do you like?
Well, obviously a guy that we just spoke to, Jared Dillard, is one of my favorite receivers in this draft. He's not the prototypical receiver in terms of height and weight at about 5'10", 185 pounds, but he makes up for that with his long arms and his incredible leaping ability. He's got good hands. He's an intelligent route runner. He knows how to extricate himself from press coverage. He's very productive in college with 50 career touchdowns. He just flat out knows how to get open. I love Jared Dillard. And also, Brandon Tate is a very interesting guy. He exploded out of the blocks in 2008, but unfortunately, he tore both his ACL and MCL back in October. But when this guy is healthy, he's got quick feet with excellent acceleration. He's strong enough to beat the jam off the line of scrimmage. He's elusive, and he's also a dangerous runner in the open field, which makes him a threat also in the return game. So to me, Brandon Tate is a legitimate playmaker, you know, provided that he bounces back and is 100% healthy as he tries to recover from his knee injury. But this guy's just going to be exciting to watch. And also, I wanted to add just another player here as a mid-round sleeper, and that's Kenny McKinley. He's quick off the snap. He has nice lateral quickness to get a clean release off the line of scrimmage. He's got reliable hands. He has superior vision after the catch. He's not a burner by any means, but he's a very heady route runner. And the biggest thing working against him is his lack of bulk at about 180 pounds. He could be pushed around a little bit. And the other thing that worked against him over at South Carolina is he played with two god-awful quarterbacks. But I think Kenny McKinley definitely has the skills to be an NFL player.
Well, I hope their parents aren't listening.
Well, one of them's not even playing football anymore. He's switched to baseball. So
that just tells you a little bit about his football skills.
All right. Well, Dan, as far as best big targets, who are some of the names that you like?
Well, we talked to one of them, Ramses Barden. So we went from the little guy, Jared Dillard, to the big man, Ramses Barden, 6'6", 227 pounds. Had an uneven Senior Bowl, but I think he showed a lot before he got there. So I think, you know, he didn't help himself necessarily, but maybe he didn't hurt himself either. He's got a lot of ball coverage, and what that means, you know, basically he's got such long arms, such big hands that if the ball is anywhere within his radius, he's going to snag it. He's got a, you know, tremendous wingspan, big, strong, reliable hands. Obviously, he's going to have to prove himself getting separation at the line of scrimmage, a major issue for big receivers that they, you know, typically have. And, you know, he doesn't really lack the upside in terms of being a big play guy, a big potential play guy in terms of stretching the football field. And an interesting guy is Aaron Kelly out of Clemson, a guy that's been productive, that's been in the spotlight kind of since his freshman season. And out of all the big guys, he's shown the best speed and explosiveness. He ran a 4.49 in the 40-yard dash, and more importantly, his 20-yard split was a 2.58, which was fourth in fastest in the combine. So he gets out of the blocks pretty quickly, which is surprising for a kid of his size. He's a little over 6'4", and he can go up and get the football. He's kind of inconsistent. I think he's getting the short change of things, though. It seems like to me he's one of those guys that people focus more on his mistakes rather than his positive side. So I think he could be a sleeper if you get him into the mid to late rounds.
All right, Ralph, big guy.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you're looking for wide receiver talent, you need to come to Queens, because you got Kevin Ogletree, a local Queens guy that's going to be drafted at some point in this draft, and this is a guy with some pretty decent upside potential. You're talking about a lanky 6'2 receiver with room to add more weight to his frame, has nice burst off the snap, impressive lateral mobility to create separation, has strong, secure hands, and kind of like Rubitsky, he's a big player who uses his size to shield defenders. The concerns with Ogletree are the fact that he tore his ACL in 2007, had wrist surgery back in 2006, and he also needs to refine his patterns a bit more, as he tends to round out his routes a little bit too much. But, you know, this is an intriguing guy that can be had in the fifth or sixth round. So I'm excited about Ogletree. The other big guy I want to highlight here from USC, University of Southern California, not South Carolina, Patrick Turner, huge receiver at 6'5", 221 pounds. He's an inviting target who times his leaps well, can make catches with defenders just draped all over him. And like most extremely tall wideouts, you know, Turner, he's not very quick out of his breaks, doesn't have much agility in the open field. But he did show improvement in 2008. He looked good in the Senior Bowl. So I think that, at the very least, I think he could be a very good possession receiver at the next level with his long arms, his big hands, his decent lateral movement to get open once he's in his route. And then finally, one other guy, he's not as big as Patrick Turner, but he's big in his own right. That's Aaron Kelly from Duke University. Aaron Riley from Duke University, 6'3". This is a guy, a sleeper you want to keep your eye on. He wowed people during his pro day, running a 4.29 40, a 40-inch vertical leap. He's a good route runner underneath. He just explodes in his slant patterns and post routes. He needs to maintain his balance a little bit better when he breaks off his routes at sharp angles, but he's a tantalizing cocktail of size, speed, and ability to get open quickly on short patterns. So keep your eye on Aaron Riley.
Okay. Well, Dan, as far as the mid-round sleeper, who have you got?
Well, one guy I really like is Mike Wallace, the kid out of Ole Miss. He really excelled in Indianapolis. He had a 4.33 40-yard dash, which was just behind Hayward Bay, and he matched Hayward Bay in terms of the quickest 20-yard split. So it shows he's got that quick, that initial burst and initial quickness to get open right away. I think he's a real diamond in the rough, a little inconsistency at the college level, but I think a lot of upside in terms of being a mid-round pick. And then staying, you know, going to out west, you have Brandon Gibson, who had the misfortune of being at Washington State, and that program has really been down in the dumps the last couple of years. But he was still able to be fairly productive. He's a guy that's got solid hands and can stretch the field. And then finally, we have Quan Cosby out of Texas, who's been, again, a very productive player. He doesn't have the ideal size or speed. He's a little older, but he knows how to play the game. He's got a lot of character. He's a good leader in the locker room. So I think when you're talking about a mid to late round pick, or just a mid round pick, I think Quan Cosby is an excellent addition to any football team.
All right, well, Ralph, as far as the mid round sleepers, who have you got?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one guy that's been impressing a lot of people in his workouts. I'm talking about Mohamed Massaquoi. Lots of teams are beginning to warm up to this guy. He's done very well in his private workouts. Has a very muscular NFL-ready body to go along with his 6'2 frame. He has top-notch leaping ability, body control. He's very elusive after the catch. And the other thing about him, you know, we spoke about intangibles with Rubitsky, and Massaquoi also offers that. He's a vocal leader, and his problem is that he drops too many passes. He doesn't always look balls and passes into his hands, but he's a very smooth receiver, and in my opinion, I don't think it should take him a long time to adapt to the pro game. I'll give you another guy that I really like here, and that's Austin Colley. He's a big, strong receiver with good hands out of BYU, not NYU.
BYU?
as I said, big receiver, lateral quickness. He runs through tackles after the catch, consistently gets open because of his fabulous route running. Word of caution with him, though, his stats at BYU may have been a bit inflated due to BYU's scheme and all the attention given to Dennis Pita, their tight end. But to me, Austin Colley is a guy that has a lot of the physical tools you're looking for. He's a tough guy. He's gonna break some tackles, as I said. Austin Colley, I think he's a player.
Okay. How about Demetrius Byrd?
Well, Demetrius Byrd is an interesting guy. I liked him better a couple of years ago. But, you know, in 2008, let's not forget, he also suffered from poor quarterback play over at LSU. When you're talking about Byrd, you're talking about a good straight line runner. He's got good straight line speed. He's got after the catch skills, particularly on bubble screens. The thing with him that he needs to work on, he needs to be more physical. And he has poor acceleration. His build-up speed is pretty good, but he needs to get better in the short areas where defenders won't give you an inch. So to me, he's got some good physical tools, but the jury's still out on Demetrius Byrd.
Okay, well, Ralph, as far as the guys who can stretch the field, the burners, the deep threats, who have you got there?
Well, as far as the deep threats go, I'm going to give you Lewis Murphy. I think Lewis Murphy is a downfield threat who uses his arms to gain separation, as well as a series of head fakes, particularly on slant routes. Not very physical and needs to be more secure in holding on to the football. But, you know, this is a guy I think who has an extremely high upside. He might have been overshadowed by many of his teammates at Florida, but he's a guy who always improved year after year, and that's one positive that teams have to look at when evaluating Lewis Murphy out of Florida.
All right, Dan, how about you? The guys who can stretch the field.
Well, I'll go with Tyquan Underwood, the burner out of Rutgers. He was another guy whose numbers went down this past season, but he's definitely got the long speed, and throughout his career he's always had an excellent yards per catch ratio. So he's a big play guy. He's not going to be necessarily a high catch guy, but he's a big play guy. And also keep an eye on a couple of small school kids Johnny Knox out of Abilene Christian, and Dominique Edison out of Stephen F. Austin, a couple of speedy guys that can stretch the field.
Okay, now, Dan, as far as the guys who we may be talking about this time next year, who are some of those guys?
Well, I think if you're looking for the speed, Jacoby Ford out of Clemson's a kid who really has the track speed. If he has a big senior year, I think he's a player that can help his stock. Armani Edwards next year is going to be kind of a poor man's Pat White in terms of being that lefty athletic quarterback that could be shifting to the slot. If we go to more underclassmen, Aurelius Ben may have the best combination of all in terms of size and speed. He'll be a junior next year. And I think a junior sleeper is Terrence Tolliver out of LSU. He really didn't put up much in terms of numbers last year, but I still love his potential. And if LSU could solidify that quarterback situation, I think he could really have a big, big junior campaign. And two guys that are at least a year away from the NFL, but may actually be the best two prospects at the position. I just got to throw their names out there. Julio Jones out of Alabama, A.J. Green out of Georgia. I think, you know, people asked who would be the best two NFL receivers out of any college players. I think those two guys would be a lot of people's choices. And DeAndre Brown out of Southern Miss, a big kid, also looked like he was NFL ready pretty much from day one as a true freshman.
All right, Ralph, some of your guys.
Well, the two guys that really get me excited are, number one, Dez Bryant out of Oklahoma State. I mean, this kid is extremely physical, aggressive, who routinely outleaps his competition, snatches the ball at its highest point with his big, strong hands. He's a fearless competitor. You know, interestingly, his name is Bryant. He reminds me a lot of Bryant out of Tampa Bay, Antonio Bryant. And the thing about him also is he runs the best fade route in college football. He is unstoppable on those fade routes in the end zone. I really love this kid, Dez Bryant. And also another guy who's very exciting to watch, a big play guy, Brandon LaFell out of LSU. You won't find a tougher player. He's fearless across the middle. He will take vicious hits and still hold on to the ball. One of the best that I've seen at executing slant plays. He'll run you over. He'll run away from you. He's an elite talent in my book, Brandon LaFell.
Okay. All right, guys, we're going to move. We're going to go to school now to wide receiver. All right. First question, greater than or less than, Terrell Owens versus Roy Williams in terms of receiving yards. Who's going to have less? Who's going to have more?
I'm going to go with Roy Williams on this one. A couple of reasons. I think, you know, last year T.O. had better numbers, but, you know, his numbers went down to 1,052 receiving yards. The last time he had that few yards and played all 16 games was 1998. The guy's 35 years old. He's definitely seen his best days. And let's face it, I know Ralph likes Trent Edwards, but, you know, he's no Tony Romo. And then, of course, let's not forget they lost Jason Peters, their left tackle just now. So that puts another question mark in terms of their passing game. I think with Tony Romo playing there, Roy Williams is 27 years old. I think he's primed for a big year. In 2006. He went for 82 catches and 1,310 yards. I could see a similar season. And also, don't forget, they're going to want to prove that they made the right move by getting rid of T.O. and by giving up the amount of picks they gave up to Roy Williams. So I think he's going to have plenty of opportunities to put up big-time numbers.
See, I'm going to go with Terrell Owens here just because, number one, Roy Williams has a lot more talent around him. You know, he's going to have Jason Witten. He's going to have Miles Austin, who I think is going to step up this year. He's got a great running game around him. So I think Terrell Owens is going to be more of a focal point in Buffalo. He's going to be more of a go-to guy. And really, if you take a look at it, T.O. is more of a proven receiver. Roy Williams is a guy that he has.
He's 35. He's proven.
I understand.
35.
But wait, let me make my point. Roy Williams will have his great games, but he also has those games where he just totally disappears, and you start wondering, is he even playing in this game? So I think Terrell Owens is the more consistent receiver. And let's not forget one more other thing about Owens. He's playing on a one-year contract, so he's plenty motivated to have a super year. He's going to be shooting for 1,500 yards this year. He might not reach that goal, but he's going to come darn close, and he's going to catch a lot of touchdowns. I'm going to go with Terrell Owens over Roy Williams here.
Okay, and one thing neither one of you guys mentioned, Lee Evans is the number one receiver in Buffalo. So I don't think T.O. just comes and automatically bumps him to the number two slot.
Well, if he doesn't get the ball, he's gonna make sure that Trent Edwards hears him.
All right, well, Ralph, we're going to move on. True or false, Brandon Edwards will bounce back from his 2007 form.
Yes, he's going to bounce back. He's too talented not to. You know, I think that Braylon Edwards, his big problem last year was not his route running, was not anything else physically. I think it was a lack of focus a lot of times. He dropped a lot of passes, and that might have been because of some of his off-field distractions. He's a guy that's very photogenic. He's on a lot of TV shows. So maybe he had a lot of outside distractions that kind of like took his mind away from the game of football. I think he'll be a lot more focused, and I think he is one of the top receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, but he was taking like 8-hour energy or something, wasn't he? So shouldn't he have the energy to do all those things? Yeah, definitely. I mean, the numbers are stunningly different from the last two seasons. None more than the touchdown catches, which went from 16 to 3. I mean, I'm not sure he's going to have 16 again, but I think I could see him approaching double digits at least. I agree with Ralph. I think he had a really bad season. It was just one of those years where everything went wrong for him. Everything went wrong in Cleveland. And I think if he does move, that can only help him. He'll probably wind up in a better situation with a better quarterback. So I expect him to bounce back as well. I say true.
Okay, guys. After Jerry Rice, blank is the best wide receiver I've ever seen.
Well, I got to go with Randy Moss here. I mean, the guy, when his career is over, he's going to finish behind Jerry Rice in receptions, in touchdowns, and in yards catched. He's already third in touchdown catches with 135, only about three or four behind Terrell Owens, who he's 4 years younger than. So even though you don't necessarily want to root for the guy and sometimes he frustrates the heck out of you, I got to say after Jerry Rice, he's the best receiver I've probably seen.
Well, leave it to Dan to give you all the numbers there. I'm going to go with Terrell Owens over Randy Moss. And I know Randy Moss is probably maybe one of the most dominant receivers of all time. But, you know, there were years there in Oakland where Randy Moss just couldn't be found.
He didn't have good numbers those years? Or what? Based on what? I mean, not numbers, what are we talking about?
Well, based on the fact that he didn't always give you honest effort. He would give up on a lot of routes, and if the ball wasn't coming to him early, he would just give up. And, you know, that's the one thing you could say about Terrell Owens. You know, for all his shenanigans off the field, for all his, you know, little tirades that he pulls and stuff like that, Terrell Owens comes to work each and every game. He's an ultimate competitor. He wants to win. He wants to do well. And to me, when he's on top of his game, he is the most difficult receiver to cover in terms of size, strength, speed. He could run with the football if he has to. I'm going to go with Terrell Owens, the best receiver I've ever seen.
All right. I guess I'm going to have to break the tie. I'm coming down on Randy Moss, to be honest with you. Love Terrell Owens as far as everything he can do because he does a little bit of everything. Randy Moss, the one weakness or complaint you can always – criticism you can levy at him is that he doesn't seem to go across the middle often, but he's a dynamic guy. And it's like when this guy feels like playing, there's no one better. All right, guys, multiple choice. Most likely to make their first Pro Bowl. These are your names: Santonio Holmes, Calvin Johnson, Marcus Colston, Dwayne Bowe, or DeSean Jackson. Go ahead, Ralph.
I'm going to give you a surprise guy here, and I'm going to go with Dwayne Bowe. You know, I like this receiver a lot. He's not a guy that needs to go deep to get the football. He's a big receiver, a strong receiver. He could turn a little short pass into a big gainer, a guy that's hard to bring down. And the thing that I like about him is he had a very nice rookie year where he gained 995 yards, coming up with the numbers like Dan here. But then he followed that up with another strong season. Didn't fall into that sophomore slump like a lot of other receivers do that come out from college football. He had over 1,000 yards last year. I think he's playing with a better quarterback, and I think he's going to be more of a go-to guy. And let's face it, the Kansas City Chiefs are not going to have a good defense in their first year under the new regime that they have there under Scott Pioli and company. So I look for the Kansas City Chiefs to play a lot of catch-up. They're going to be throwing the ball all over the field, and Dwayne Bowe is going to be the recipient of a lot of those throws coming from Matt Castle.
Well, I'm not going to argue against Dwayne Bowe. I'm a big fan of Mr. Bowe, but I'm going to go with Calvin Johnson. I think he's clearly, I think, the most talented guy in this group. Obviously, making a Pro Bowl, it's going to be a team thing as well. But, you know, the guy put up Pro Bowl numbers last year, over 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns to Tyrese Fitzgerald to lead the league, 17 yards per catch. Honestly, I'm not sure why he's even on this list because he should have made the Pro Bowl last year.
Okay. I like Santonio Holmes. I think what happened in the Super Bowl, I think this guy just hit another level, and I think he's going to be – he's going to turn into one of the better wide receivers in the NFL.
He can stay off the pike.
That can do amazing things for his confidence. All right, guys, short answer. Who's the top receiving duo in the NFL? Dan, we'll start with you.
I mean, today?
Yes, sir.
Today, it's still got to be Arizona with Bolden and Fitzgerald. I think three out of the last 4 years, each guy went over 1,000 yards. Whenever these guys are healthy, they put up productive numbers. Obviously, tomorrow things could change because Bolden could be on another team. But if you're asking me today, I think it's still the Arizona Cardinals with those two guys.
I'm going to go with Randy Moss and Wes Welker. They've proven that they're both extremely productive. I think the best top receiving duo in the NFL right now. In the future, maybe a duo like Brandon Marshall and Eddie Royal could be those guys. But, you know, with Jay Cutler not there right now, I don't know if that's the case. But right now I'm going to go with Welker and Moss over in New England.
Okay, I'm going to have to agree with you, Ralph. Welker, as far as Welker and Moss, and remember, they just signed Joey Galloway, too.
And I love the way they complement each other. You know, you have the big deep threat and the small guy who runs the little routes, little short routes.
Okay, guys, we're going to try to get through this one. We have upcoming guests in Travis Beckham and Cornelius Ingram from Wisconsin and Florida, respectively. All right, we're talking tight ends. Okay, any tight ends who can go in the first round, Dan.
Well, I know Ralph is going to want to go with Brandon Pettigrew, so I'll give you Jared Cook as a second tight end who could go in the first round. He wowed everybody with his performance at the combine, 40-yard dash, vertical leap, a tremendous athleticism, big-time potential as a pass catcher, a kid who was a wide receiver early on in his career and shifted to the tight end position. I think he needs to put on a little more weight. He's not as well-rounded, but a lot of big play potential.
All right, Ralph.
I like Brandon Pettigrew, as Dan mentioned. I love his big, soft, natural hands. He's an effortless pass catcher. He has the strength to make catches in traffic. He moves well laterally to evade defenders. But he isn't a breakaway threat. But I think he's the most complete tight end in terms of catching the ball and blocking. Some people have compared him to Bubba Franks. I think it could be even better than Bubba Franks at the next level.
You mean a young Bubba? You mean Green Bay Bubba Franks?
Yeah,
not your Jets Bubba Franks.
That's cold. All right, tell us. Who else could be a day one pick, Ralph?
Well, I'll give you James Casey. This guy, and he's just an amazing story. Casey is a former baseball player who was in the Chicago White Sox system. He's versatile, athletic as a football player. Once played 7 different positions in one game. Has wide receiver skills in terms of his quick burst and agility, but also displays toughness. He's willing to absorb hits to gain extra yardage. James Casey is a guy with extremely high upside, and the guy that I like, perhaps my favorite tight end, hopefully he's healthy enough to produce at the next level, Chase Kaufman. He's an outstanding route runner who could line up split wide, in motion, or on the line. He has good balance. Not a breakaway guy, but is agile and acrobatic after the catch with his vision and huge leaps over defenders. Mm-hmm. He does have some foot issues, and that's a big concern. But as I said, if he's healthy, I like Chase Kaufman a lot as a tight end in the NFL.
All right, and of course, in the NFL, the first stage is 2 rounds, so we're talking first, second rounders. Who do you have, Dan?
Well, we got the two guys that are going to be coming on with us that you mentioned, Cornelius Ingram, Travis Beckham. Both similar to Jared Cook in terms that they're far ahead in the development as pass catchers than they are blockers. And both of them also are coming off seasons that were completely injury plagued. Ingram did not play at all. Beckham did not see much action as well. But they both have a lot of talent, a lot of potential. I mean, Ingram's a guy similar to Cook that, you know, you almost forget he's a tight end when he's out there. He looks like a wide receiver. That's how athletic he is. And Beckham is a guy that's such an instinctive football player. He went from playing defense to offense and put up about 60-something catches and 900 yards in his first season on the offensive side of the ball. Not quite the 40 speed of an Ingram or a Cook, but a very good, fluid athlete. Actually reminds me a lot of Dustin Keller, who came out of the Big Ten as well. And then finally, Shaun Nelson, who I think has proven to maybe be the second most well-rounded tight end after Brandon Pettigrew. He was also lumped in with these guys as being more of a pass catcher than a blocker, but he did an outstanding job of blocking throughout the Senior Bowl, handled Ray Maluga on a couple drills, which really impressed me a lot. So I think Shaun Nelson's moving up a lot. I think he could have gone from being about the sixth or seventh tight end to maybe even the third tight end in this draft.
So he's more of a full Nelson than a half Nelson.
Ryan, you should have seen Ralph's face waiting to come out with that.
All right, Ralph, since you're so anxious, you start this one off. Okay, what if a team is looking for a number two tight end?
Well, if you're looking for size, then you're looking for a guy like Bear Pascoe. He's a throwback player, a strong blocker who run out to clear out linebackers at the second level. He's a natural pass catcher as well, who runs hard after contact. As I said, he's about 6'5", 260, a big guy. Another big guy is Richard Quinn, one of the few tight ends who's effective as an inline blocker. Has a powerful lower and upper body. He plays with great technique and leverage, and he creates holes in the running game. He's a good pass blocker. He can seal run lanes. Doesn't have much burst or fluidity as a pass catcher, but that's not what you're looking for with Richard Quinn. And the other guy here is Dan Gronkowski out of Maryland, one of the fabulous Gronkowskis. Tremendous height at 6'6". He's very good at finding holes in zone coverage, has secure hands to hang on to the ball after a big hit, has the upper body strength to lock up with defenders in pass protection, and agile enough to move laterally with defenders looking to penetrate in coverage and pass protection, I should say. But he's more of a short yardage guy. He's not very explosive, and he's not quick off the line.
All right, Dan, how about you, some of the blocking or number two tight end?
I think if you're looking for a solid guy that gives you a little bit of everything, that's John Phillips, the kid out of Virginia. Solid blocker, decent hands, could be a little bit of a weapon in the red zone. If you're looking for somebody who's more of a pass catcher, you could go with Corey Sperry, the kid out of Colorado State. He's definitely undersized, and I don't see him developing into a starter at the next level, but he can definitely catch the football. He was like a number one receiver for that team and capable of making spectacular catches, able to stretch the field. So it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for that kind of guy, if you already have a very well-rounded tight end or your number one tight end is more of a blocking guy to begin with and you're looking for a guy to contribute in the passing attack, a guy like Corey Sperry could be your man.
Okay. Well, now, sleepers. Dan, start us off. What sleepers are there? The guys we don't know their names, but might do some damage in the next level.
I think the main one here is Cameron Morrow, the underclassman out of Cal. He surprised a lot of people by leaving, but I think he's got a lot of potential, a lot of upside, very athletic kid. You would have liked to have seen a little more production. That's why people wanted him to come back, but you may be getting great value if he, you know, depending on where he goes in this draft. He's a guy that maybe if he went back to school could have gone one or two, maybe even three rounds higher than you'll get him this year. So that's why I think he's a real sleeper. Then you got a kid like Anthony Hill who would have been rated higher a couple years ago but has really gone through a lot of injuries and started to come on a little bit at the end of his senior season. So maybe he's a kid that's finally getting healthy if he could stay on the field. And you got a small school kid in Jared Bronson who if you catch the football, and a guy I like a lot out of East Carolina, Devin Drew is another guy. Doesn't quite have the measurables in terms of the combine numbers like the first group. Obviously, that's why he's not in the first group, but also a very productive pass catcher and a very smooth athlete.
Yeah, out of this group, I like Ryan Purvis a lot. As a pass catcher, he can beat the jam at the line of scrimmage. He eludes coverage with his lateral quickness, but he won't stretch the field, but he can find holes in zone coverage. To me, he's more of a security blanket type of guy. And I also like Devon Drew, former quarterback. He's still a little raw. He needs to work on his blocking technique, but he's got very good hands. So I like his future as well.
Okay, now, as far as stars of tomorrow, Ralph, give me some of your guys for that.
Well, the second of the fabulous Gronkowskis is Rob Gronkowski. And this guy is even more talented than his brother. Rob Gronkowski's got great blocking ability. He's got great hands, size, 6'6", 260, has very soft hands, makes catches in tight coverage. He's not as fast as a guy like Aaron Hernandez, which I'll get to in a second, but as a downfield threat, he is a downfield threat for sure, And he's already been compared to the former Sooner, Keith Jackson, for guys who used to watch football back in the 80s and 90s. The other guy that I like is Aaron Hernandez out of Florida, the Connecticut kid. He is definitely a downfield threat. He creates mismatches with his speed, has extraordinary quickness, which allows him to gain immediate separation from linebackers and defensive backs. The thing about him, he's not a blocker, but he reminds some people of Vernon Davis in terms of his athleticism.
I know we got our next guest on the line, so I'll be quick. I think the top four seniors heading into next year, the guy who could be special is the kid out of Oklahoma, Jermaine Gresham, who shocked people by not coming back, by not leaving, and I think he'll be for sure a first-round pick next year. We have Garrett Graham out of Wisconsin, who I think gives you the best balance in terms of blocking and pass catching. Dennis Pitta out of BYU, extremely productive pass catcher. He's got to show you more as a blocker, though. And then Ed Dixon out of Oregon, I think it right now is behind Graham and Pitta, but maybe has more potential. And if he could have a breakout season, I could see him moving up to maybe number two.
Okay, well, we've obviously moved up to the tight end portion of the show. And without any further ado, we're going to bring you Travis Beckham out of Wisconsin. Hey, Travis, thank you for joining us.
No problem. How you doing?
We're doing quite well. I'm Rodney Tao. My partner is Danny Mogagnon and Ralph Fantini, and this is the All Access Football Friday show. First question, 8 days from the draft. What's your mindset right now?
I'm just waiting, and it's just something that I've kind of been waiting for my whole life and kind of getting anxious. I think I'm pretty cool now. I think I'm going to be a totally different person on come draft day.
Okay, when you say you're calm and cool right now, I mean, what goes through your mind as you think about this? Are you thinking about any specific teams, or are you going to share that with us?
I mean, not really. I think that more teams have shown interest, and it's kind of just you got to look back and just look at it and say, have you done the best that you could? And I think that I did, and unfortunately I had an injury during the season. Which kind of limited me to my playing time. But coming off my injury, I'm 100%. I'm excited, and I'm just anxious about what's going to happen. So,
okay. What teams have shown interest in you by way of private workouts?
I worked out with the New England Patriots. I worked out with the St. Louis Rams, and I worked out with the Cleveland Browns. And those are the teams that have kind of contacted me more and the New York Giants, kind of the teams that look for tight ends that are more receiving tight ends and can be threats down the field and like to utilize their tight ends to where they're on the line and kind of split out. So teams like that have kind of contacted me.
Hey, Travis, we were talking about you a little while ago, and one of the things that I brought up was the amazing transition you made from defense to offense. Talk about that, going from being a linebacker to a tight end, and I believe you almost put up 1,000 yards in your first year as a tight end.
Yeah, it was all throughout high school I played linebacker, came to the University of Wisconsin, was recruited as a linebacker, played about, I probably played in one game as linebacker and finished the season at defensive end, and then ended up talking to my coaches and telling them, what would you guys think about me playing tight end? They kind of laughed about it at first, and I said, no, coach, I'm being serious. The following year was my sophomore spring ball. Worked out at tight end, fell in love with it ever since, and it feels at home, and it's kind of where I fit, and I think that's where I look to stay. My freshman year, or my sophomore year, I had, I believe it was about 903 yards. So I'm looking at my junior year. I'm saying all I want to do is get better and get better. So that's kind of my process from the transition of going from linebacker to tight end.
So do you think you kind of get the best of both worlds to some extent, where you get to flank out, you get to catch the football, you get to be that, you know, that playmaking offensive guy, but being a tight end, you also get to smash, you know, play a little smash mouth football as well?
Most definitely. I think that tight end is definitely one of the most important players on the offense, just because of they have to be in the blocking scheme and know all the routes, especially with depending on what team. Tight ends are very unique in what they do, and a lot of them are split out, and a lot of them have to know the blocking schemes. But, yeah, I mean, tight end's a very unique position, but I extremely like it, so.
Yeah, hi, Travis. Ralph Mancini here. You mentioned your fabulous route-running skills, but not everybody knows that you have an impressive 34-inch arm span. How does that help you in separating from defenders?
I think that when you're separated from defenders, every advantage that you have helps. Whether it's your hands are bigger, or your arms are longer, or it all depends. I think that it's good that I can separate from defenders. I like to a lot of times in college, which is going to be different. Therefore, I'm going to have to make a transition in the NFL. But I like to lean on defenders, and when defenders will be on me, for instance, if I was running a corner route at the top of my route, I'd like to lean on them. That's going to be totally different in the NFL, but everything that you have, you got to take advantage of. So.
Now, when you talk about leaning and getting separation, what's the secret to kind of pushing off and not getting called for it?
I don't necessarily mean push off, but if I'm running a route, for instance, and I have the guy on my inside hip, I can kind of lean my body. If I'm going to run a corner route to the right, I can lean my body to the left and just at the top of my route, jab in and come out, and he's lost. He's going to think I'm running a post or a dig, and he's kind of like – and sometimes they turn their hips, and as soon as they turn their hips and you break outside, it's over, and the quarterback has a great view to just set the ball out there and let you go make a play.
Oh, Travis, how have your interviews gone with NFL people? Have any of them really quizzed you on what you know and your different abilities and your ability to absorb certain plays and stuff like that? How's that gone? How's that process gone?
It's gone real well, actually. I think that just in general, every football player has a different style of learning. I'm a very kinesthetic learner. I like to walk through. I like to see it. I'm a visual learner. And every interview that I had with teams, that was brought up, and we constantly, I don't want to say constantly, but we've gone over plays every interview I had. And speaking of that, one funny one I had was with the Patriots, and I was kind of prepared for it. He drew up a play on the board, told me to remember it, but then he erased it, and I thought that was it, that I didn't remember it. And more towards the end of the interview, he told me, this is about an hour and a half later, he told me to write up that play. And so I was trying to think that, like, oh, I got this play, like, no problem. I definitely remembered it, but it was kind of definitely different from the Patriots, what they threw at. So definitely fun, though. So.
All right. Well, Travis, before we let you go, we want to ask you three quick questions. We call this segment Three and Out. All right? First question. Last album you bought, by whom?
Last album I bought? I want to say Day 26. I don't remember what the album was called, but the album was called Day 26 by Day 26. So that was the last album I bought.
All right, good answer.
Travis, second down. You know, as we just finished watching my favorite baseball player of all time, Gary Sheffield, hit his 500th home run, I have to ask you, who is your favorite all-time baseball player?
I think my favorite all-time baseball player would have to be, probably Ken Griffey Jr. I really liked his style of play and what he did, he was able to do on the baseball field. So,
oldie but a goodie.
All right, Travis, so I'm going to give you an easier one. Back to music. Biggie or Tupac?
Oh, man, you said this was going to be easy. That was tougher. Let me see. Biggie or Tupac? I would have to say, I was just listening to Biggie the other day. I'd probably say Biggie. But they're both extremely talented. But, yeah, I'd have to definitely go on the Biggie side.
All right.
Well, Travis, thanks for giving us a couple of minutes there, and good luck moving forward. The draft is 8 days away. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Travis Beckham, the very good tight end out of Wisconsin. Going to make someone happy in 8 or 9 days. Our next guest is another tight end. This one's from Florida, and he's Cornelius Ingram. Hey, Cornelius Ingram, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay, this is the All Access Football Friday show. I'm Rodney Tell. My partner is Ralph Mancini, Danny Mogagnon. Our first question is, okay, you entered into the NFL. How's the rehab? Are you fully healthy yet?
I'm definitely fully healthy right now. I was just telling my brother a couple of days ago, basically feel like, nothing even happened, but, just going through my rehab process at Florida, having a lot of one-on-one time with the rehab therapist, and it actually worked out, and it was to my advantage because I was able to recover so fast.
Cornelius, was there any thought to trying to come back for another year at all?
Never really crossed my mind, to be honest. But at the same time, I already had graduated in December. The team had just won a national championship. Of course, I didn't play this past season, but the year before last when we won it, I actually played pretty good in the championship game, and, I was a part of it. So, I kind of felt like, everything that, you could possibly do, as a college football player at the University of Florida, I had done it. So I thought it was basically time to move on.
It had nothing to do with, because there's a lot of depth at Florida. So it wasn't a thing of, playing time being an issue, and you figured you might as well learn to play at the next level?
Yeah, I definitely don't think the depth was an issue for me. Never been, a cocky or conceited guy there in my life, but, I know I could play ball. So that definitely wouldn't be the case, as far as depth. And there is a lot of depth there, and it will be for years to come. But depth definitely wasn't an issue at the time. Like I said, I just felt like I really did everything you could do, and it was time to move on.
So at the end of the day, with all that depth, you played with guys like Bubba Caldwell, Percy Harvin, Dallas Baker. You think that was more of a benefit than a hindrance for you in developing as a playmaker?
Yeah. It's funny you say that because even that year or this past season or the year before last or last year when I was playing, we would tell each other all the time, this team is loaded. And we knew, if we got the ball at any point of the game, that we better do something with it because the team is loaded, and you never know when you might get your chance again on that team because, we have to spread the ball out with all the playmakers that we have, and, it worked out to our advantage. It was never any, jealousy or anything like that between us. We knew that we were pretty good football players, so once you had the opportunity to get the ball, just make sure you did something with it, and that's what we tried doing.
And also, Cornelius, not everybody knows that at one time you played quarterback. How has your past as a quarterback helped you in developing as a top-notch tight end?
Understanding defenses and where to go, making the zone and man reads really quick. And it really helps out. It helps out a lot. And I think once I made that transition, the route running and the catching the ball became easy because, I also played basketball in high school and I played my freshman year. So I always had really good hand-eye coordination. And then just by me playing quarterback, I really understood the offense and the defense a lot better than probably most guys.
Also, we understand that there's another tight end in the extended family there. Your uncle, Jamie McDonald, played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at one time. Have you had a chance to talk to him, and what type of advice has he given you?
I'm so sorry, but never heard of the guy. He's definitely not my uncle. Someone asked me about it, like, last year, and
really?
I was like, who? But I don't think I'm related to him, not that I know of.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I must have read
yeah.
wrong information. Wow,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Hey,
okay.
Cornelius, let me ask you, since you played hoops there, what did you learn from not only Urban Meyer but Coach Donovan as well?
Oh, man. I think Coach Donovan and Coach Meyer are similar coaches, you know, very young, very passionate guys, and they just love to compete and want to win, you know, all the time. So, you know, my time with Coach Donovan, you know, was very special because he started recruiting me, like, when I was in the eighth grade. And he was definitely one of the main reasons I chose the University of Florida, because he was going to let me play both sports. And I had a personal relationship with him, you know, kind of throughout high school, and that really made me choose a school. But he's definitely a great coach. And, you know, you can just tell by the guys that he recruits, the family type atmosphere that he has with the basketball program. And it's no secret why, you know, they're pretty good.
So if we had spoken to you, let's say, about 4 or 5 years ago, and we asked you right now, would you be getting ready for the NBA draft or the NFL draft, what would you have said?
I probably would have told you guys that's a good question. Because I think I might have been a better basketball player. But, you know, I knew, you know, with my size and everything like that, it was definitely perfect for football. So, you know, I kind of was kind of considering my future when I made the decision to stay with football. But I definitely say that was a good question if y'all would ask me that back then.
And I asked you to compare and contrast the coaches, and you talked about their passion. You played with two guys who played with a lot of passion, Tim Tebow and then Joakim Noah. On the basketball court, kind of compare those guys a little bit. I mean, both passionate guys, but they seem like they're probably pretty different guys.
Yeah, totally different, totally opposite. But, you know, like you said, they're passionate. They're passionate about what they're doing, you know, on the court or on the football field. But as far as, you know, off the field, I think Joe might still be a little emotional and passionate about everything that he's doing. But I think Tim is, you know, like 10 times laid back, you know, off the field, great guy. And you can approach either one of those guys for pictures, autographs, like two of the most humblest guys I ever met. And, you know, with Joakim being so tall, people is automatically attracted to him as soon as they see him because, you know, he's 7 foot, you know, they know who he is. And, you know, he's probably one of the most thrilling guys I've ever been around. And, you know, I feel bad for Tim sometimes with some of the stuff that he has to go through with, you know, people, autographs, do this, do that kind of thing. But, you know, they always take their time out to do it. But I think Tim is definitely a lot more laid back than Joe off the playing field.
Cornelius, I had one more here. Tell us why you have what it takes to be an immediate impact player as opposed to being a guy that's going to need 2 to 3 years to develop?
I think, you know, right now I could definitely stretch the field for any team. And I'm so hungry and ready to play right now. I think sitting out an entire season, you know, I have a lot of time, you know, to just think about how grateful, you know, I am, you know, just to be able to, you know, walk or run because, you know, I've ran across people or I've seen people, you know, that couldn't do any of that. And, you know, I'm just real fortunate right now because I really, really want to play. And it's sad because it was one of the toughest things I had to go through as far as being on the sideline and watching my team be so successful this season. But I got to give credit to the coaches and our strength program Everybody treated me, from my teammates to everybody that had anything to do with the University of Florida football, they treated me like I was catching touchdowns the entire season when I was going through my rehab process and everything. So that definitely, you know, motivated me and kept me going all the time. But I definitely think I could be a immediate impact because I can, you know, stretch the field. You know, I wouldn't cause any problems off the field. Coaches won't have anything to worry about because I'm going to just go in and work hard for, you know, my position or whether it's special teams, whether it's catching the ball, whatever it might be. I know I'm athletic enough to do a lot of those things, and I'm willing to listen and I can take coaching. So I definitely think I can be an immediate impact.
All right, well, Cornelius, you're definitely, as far as your receiving skills, you're possibly one of the best tight ends as far as your receiving skills. What can you tell us about your blocking skills, though?
You know what? I think that might be the main concern with all the teams, to be honest, as far as blocking, because, you know, the style of offense we run at Florida, this is spread offense, and, you know, I wasn't tight or attached, you know, maybe. I can't even remember, you know, but that's just the style of offense we ran. So I was doing more stop blocking, and because I played in the slot, you know, majority of the time. But, you know, I know I could block, and I actually had the opportunity to get the coaches some of my spring tape the same year right before I tore my ACL, because our offense, you know, we had put in two tight end sets. And, you know, that's what we were going to do a lot of going into fall camp. So a lot of the NFL coaches actually see me attached and tight blocking. And I think that's definitely their main concern. But, you know, it's almost just like, you know, it comes down to, you know, having heart and wanting to do it. And I know I have both of those because I've shown it, but, you know, I'm just lined out. I'm just lined up in the slot, and I'm just not attached. So I know I can do it. I think a lot of the coaches that got some of that spring tape that I had showing me doing it. So it's definitely not a case where I can't, because it's always, you know, pretty much built inside of, you know, whoever the person might be. If they want to do something, they're going to do it, and I definitely want to get it done. And I think I've shown some of the coaches that with some of my spring tape. But, you know, I'm just excited right now.
Okay. All right, Cornelius, before we let you go, we like to do something we call three and out. We're going to ask
three
you three quick questions. It's called three and out.
Uh-huh.
All right? First down is going to be your favorite movie of all time.
Ooh, favorite movie of all time. I might have to go with Life with Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy.
Okay, second down. You're a hoops guy. Growing up, which basketball player did you want to be when you grew up?
Come on, man. Michael Jordan.
Everybody wants to be like Mike.
You like Mike, right?
Can I please add this right now?
Go ahead.
Kobe Bryant's definitely my MVP right now, though. I had to put that
all
in.
Right. Fair enough. Now, since you're a guy who's going to be in the draft and you're into hoops, who would you take number one overall, the UConn kid, Hashim Thabeet, or would you go Blake Griffin from UConn, from Oklahoma?
Blake Griffin by far. Easy.
By far. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, let's get a bonus one. Since you're a big basketball guy, who's winning the championship this year, Cornelius?
Oh, Lakers.
Okay.
Got to go with the Lakers.
All right, hey, Cornelius, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, good luck going forward, and we hope to see – no, we will see you on Sundays on the field in the NFL. All right,
okay,
good luck.
It. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you again. That was Cornelius Ingram, the tight end from Florida. Okay. Dominique Rose has just signed a 2-year contract with the Buffalo Bills. So guess what? A little bit more firepower for that team. As three New York Jets fans, that's a nice help, especially now. But they've got Jackson, Marshawn Lynch is going to be out for the first three games of the season. suspension. So I guess Dominique Rose adds to the depth at the running back position.
Yeah, I think that has to figure in to looking at depth, the fact that Lynch is out for those couple games. And, you know, he's a question mark, let's be honest, in terms of what, you know, character. So, you know, you got to protect yourself in this league, especially with Goodell as the commissioner.
Yeah, Rhodes is a quality complementary runner in tandem with Fred Jackson. I think he could do very well. You know, he could catch the football, you know that for certain. And over brief stretches, he can have that one ball game where he carries the ball, let's say, 25 times for 100 yards. He is capable of that type of performance. Just don't expect it for 16 games. But overall, I think this is a nice pickup.
All right. Well, guys, let's move on. We've got about 10 minutes left. We're going to go to school now on the tight ends. All right? Greater than, less than. We're talking about receiving yards between Jason Witten and Kellen Winslow the third. Wait, or is that Junior?
Junior, the second. Yeah, I'm going to go with Jason Witten. I just think he's a superior tight end. And now in Dallas, with Terrell Owens out of the picture, who else is going to be that number two guy that's going to catch the ball alongside Boy Williams? Well, that's going to be Jason Witten, extremely athletic guy for a man who's 6'6", about 250, 260 pounds, a tremendous player, and has a great relationship with Tony Romo. They're friends off the field as well. So I look for Witten to go over 1,000 yards this year.
Yeah, I agree with Ralph. I think you'll be hard-pressed to go with Winslow, although Tampa is paying him like he should be the top, you know, receiving tight end in the NFL, especially when you factor in that Witten's a better blocker than he is. But, yeah, three out of the last – since Winslow's been in the league, only 1 year did he have more receiving yards than Witten. And as you said, you got to give him an edge at the quarterback position. Even, you know, I'm not necessarily the biggest Romo fan, but you got to figure he's going to be better than whatever Tampa rolls out there.
In the regular,
you know,
season.
In the regular season. Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about, regular season. So there's no worry about the playoff choke at all. That's – you got to make the playoff choke
right.
In the playoffs. Last year they didn't even make the playoffs, but I think – clearly, Witten's got the edge here, even though Winslow's got the contract.
Yeah, I got to agree with you guys. Winslow will definitely have less receiving yards than Jason Witten. All right, question number two. Tight end Tony Gonzalez will have his third straight 1,000-yard season. Dan?
I'm going to say false here. I mean, in his career, he's had four 1,000-yard seasons. He did it in 2000, in 2004, in 2007, and in 2008. So up until last year, he had never even done it in back-to-back seasons, let alone three in a row. He's 33 years old. I know Ralph's going to tell you he's got a great quarterback coming in, so his numbers are going to go up. But I think he's 33 years old, and sooner or later in the NFL, your numbers start going down. And I think that's going to happen for Tony starting this year. And they did bring in a veteran receiver in Ingram, and they also brought in Bradley. So maybe they spread the wealth out a little more in Kansas City this year.
Well, let's take it easy with the adjectives there. I never said Cackle's a great quarterback, but he is a definite upgrade there. And they are going to be throwing the ball early and often over in Kansas City because they're going to be giving up a lot of points. But you see, the thing, I'm not worried about Gonzalez being 33 years old. To me, this is one of the few athletes who is getting better as he's getting older. We all remember Gonzalez a couple of years ago totally changed his diet around. He's now a vegetarian. As a result, he's a lot leaner. He's quicker than he was a few years ago. So to me, this is a guy, if he stays healthy, could actually maintain his level of excellence and even get a little bit better. So I look for him to have another 1,000-yard campaign.
Is he on a different vegetarian diet than Mr. Fielder?
I think Gonzalez is eating three meals a day as opposed to Fielder eating maybe about six or seven.
Okay. All right. All right, guys. Next question. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm forgetting. All right. I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. At some point, even the great ones slow down at some point. And with Dwayne Bowe, and I'm not sold on Castle after 1 year. I know we love to do that, but last year at this time, Jarrell was being praised as such a great move by Jacksonville. Last time I checked, he didn't have such a great second year after he got the big contract. So I'm going to say no, even though I still think Tony Gonzalez has a lot left, and I think the Chiefs would do him a favor by letting him go somewhere else. And he's being very classy the way he's handling this, because if I'm him, I want out. I want to go to a playoff contender. All right. Guys, next question. In the red zone, blank is the most dangerous weapon.
I'll go with Antonio Gates from San Diego, you know, the power forward. He's got the athleticism. He's got the hops to go up and get the rebound. He's got the body to box out the defenders to get the ball. So he's that classic, you know, basketball athlete like we talked about with Cornelius Ingram, who was just on the phone to be a weapon in the red zone the last 5 years, 13, 10, 9, 9, and 8 in terms of touchdowns. So 49 touchdowns in 5 years. The guy basically averages 10 a year. I think, you know, if they I would throw it at him even more personally than they do, I think. I think they should use him even more in the red zone. But he's got that combination of size and athleticism that just makes him so difficult to stop.
Yeah, and Antonio Gates, I'm going to go with Gates obviously also here. With him, he's one of those tight ends that even if he's covered, you throw him the ball because he's going to find a way to jump up and get it. So in the red zone, he is their first, second, and third option. Phillip Rivers looks to him every time, and that's the guy that I would go with, Antonio Gates, above anybody else at the tight end position.
That's a shame, but I got to make it unanimous. Antonio Gates as well. I mean, who's better than this guy? But I like what you said, Dan. San Diego's a team. Their play calling is mind-boggling because I don't think Gates gets the ball enough down there. But I guess when you got LaDainian and Tomlinson, that could be part of the reason why. All right, our next question now. Multiple choice. These are the first tight ends in the last three drafts. Dustin Keller, Greg Olsen, Vernon Davis. Who's most likely to break out next year?
I think this is the year that the Jersey boy puts it all together. Greg Olsen is playing with Jay Cutler, who's a huge upgrade at the quarterback position for the Chicago Bears. He's got great quickness. I think. And who else do they have to throw to on that team? I mean, is Devin Hester a number one receiver? I don't think so. I think Olsen is going to be the man. I look for his numbers to skyrocket this year. And him and Jay Cutler, they're already tagging along together, hanging out together. So I think they're going to have a good relationship off the field and on the field as well.
Yeah, I got, are they as close as Romo and Witten?
They're getting there.
I got to agree. I got to go with Olsen as well. My heart wants to go with Dustin Keller and say he's going to build on a solid rookie season, but I think Ralph put it up, Jay Cutler. I mean, we don't even know who the Jets quarterback is going to be. Jay Cutler is a huge upgrade. Olsen already saw a jump in his numbers, 39, 391, two touchdowns. Last year he had 54 grabs for 574 yards and five touchdowns. I don't see why he doesn't have yet another leap with Jay Cutler, and he should be his favorite target. Like Ralph said, Devin Hester, come on, a tremendous playmaker. He's not a number one receiver. I think right now Olsen has the chance to be kind of like Tony Gonzalez was for many years in Kansas City, the number one receiver as a tight end.
The go-to guy.
All right, but I see it. I'm going to go with Dustin Keller because I just think 500 yards, rookie tight end, with playing alongside Kotry and Coles, playing with the great Brett Favre, I think that's significant. And I think the fact that the Jets have a neophyte quarterback coming in actually plays into him building on last year. And looking at the Cutler situation in Chicago, like you said, who do they have? I mean, as much as we love the man as a kickoff returner, we don't know what Devin Hester can do as a wide receiver as the number one guy. So I think if I'm playing defense, I have to take away the tight end from Jay Cutler. So I actually like Dustin Keller to be the guy who breaks out in this group here. All right, so.
Okay.
Last one.
Okay, and we got one more. Okay, who is the greatest, the best tight end you've ever seen?
The GOAT.
Well, I mean, part of me wanted to go with Keith Jackson, who Ralph brought up before. He was, you know, one of my favorites to watch. But I'm going to go with the senior, Kellen Winslow, and say he's the best tight end I've seen. I didn't see his full career, but I think, you know, what he only played 9 years, still put up tremendous numbers, five-time Pro Bowl selection, three-time All-Pro, and the numbers he would have put up in this era I think would have been mind-boggling.
I'll tell you what, when I look at my ideal tight end, I want him to be a complete player. And to me, the most complete guy out there that I've seen in my years watching football is the guy affectionately known as Rambo, Mark Bavaro, for the New York Giants. Only gave you a brief window of outstanding production. But when he was good, he was great. Not only could he block, not only was he tough, but he would catch the ball and just drag defenders down the field, the ultimate competitor. I loved watching Mark Bavaro. To me, I just enjoyed watching him above anybody else at that position.
I think I'd go Ozzie Newsome if you went more two-way, if you had to go in that direction.
Yes, I mean, but I've got to agree with you. I mean, yes, Kellen Winslow Sr. was not the greatest blocker, but playing over those great San Diego teams, that was like some great football to watch. Why was those San Diego teams? I'm going to have to go with Kellen Winslow Sr. because this guy was basically a wide receiver in a tight end's body, and he wasn't a terrible blocker, but he just wouldn't make his money blocking. All right, yes, he was. And like you said, put him in the offenses these days, his numbers would explode. But we want to thank you for joining us. Once again, the NFL draft is 8 days away. Don't forget to check out NFL Draft Bible. The information is being updated. We're getting the interviews are being transcribed and put on the site. And where else are you going to get better information from? Once again, check out all the other shows on the NFL Draft Bible as well. Brian Spector, Scott Daniels, and thank you for joining us.